I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. Today's show, Auburn Avenue.
One of the things I just think is something people have just sort of heard about, they don't know. You know, they've heard about Sweet Auburn, they've heard about Sweet Auburn, they know Dr. King is there, but most of them have never really ventured down there.
It's like no person's land, no one body. You know, it's like, do I really want to be on the, when you're coming from downtown and you look down Auburn and you get to the viaduct, it's like, meh, do I really want to go on the other side of that?
If you stand in front of the mask of John Wesley Dobbs, you can see through his eyes and you see, you know, the skyline of Atlanta. And you can get so many different narratives of history if you walk from the King home all the way up to Cortland. You know, you're moving through residential, you're moving through religious spaces, you're moving through a business district that included, you know, the Royal Peacock and a vibrant culture of dance, leisure.
You know, now we've got an aquarium and we're going to have a civil and human rights center and we're going to have some other things. But, you know, the real fabric of the city, the historic fabric of it that is accessible to visitors, really is at Auburn Avenue.
One of Atlanta's huge strengths is that cultural history that we have around Auburn Avenue. Cities change over time, and that's natural. That's what happens. It's not unique to Atlanta. It's not unique to Auburn Avenue. Auburn Avenue is never going to be the street that it once was. It's going to be something else. But I think the important thing is that it's the people who are part of that culture and that history being a part of that transformation and making it into what they want it to be. It may not be able to be what they want it to be, but leveraging it to become what it can be in a way that contributes even more to Atlanta's its culture and its history.
Who gets to stay? Who doesn't? What do we bring? How to take, you know, historic fabric, how to save, you know, the most important pieces of it. Frankly, if we're not careful, you know, Auburn Avenue will be Auburn Avenue in name only. I mean, if you blindfolded me and took off the blindfold, if we're not careful about what we do, how will I know where I am? How will anyone know? And if we think it's important and we think place matters, then we need to make sure that we keep the place in a way that matters.
My guests today are Ryan Gravel, senior urban designer at Perkins & Will.
Cities need to be more competitive and be the kinds of place where people want to live. And part of that is by providing public space and transportation, all the things that create that kind of environment. But part of it is also distinguishing themselves from one another. And what's amazing about the Beltline or projects like the Los Angeles River is that they leverage the very assets of that town, you know, what created that city. Atlanta is a railroad town. We're levering those assets to actually create our future. And so there's something really authentic and differentiating about that.
M. Tamanika Youngblood, chairwoman of the Historic District Development Corporation.
It really was less about the buildings, even though they're very important. It was less about the buildings and more about what the buildings embodied in terms of our ability to overcome and to achieve in an environment where that's very difficult. And I want to preserve that.
Carrie Williams, an archivist at the Auburn Avenue Research Library.
Our mission is to keep telling the story, you know, of the beginning of the Auburn Avenue Research Library, that it's not, you know, this really beautiful building on Auburn and Cortland, but that the history of it reaches back to the history of Auburn, and that it was a struggle, you know, a political struggle for African Americans to have a resource of information available to them.
And the chef and owner of the Sweet Auburn Bread Company, Chef Sonia Jones.
It's a tight-knit community. I'm drawn to it. It's like where I grew up. You knew everyone. And there you have people that have been there. I mean, it has amazed me to hear so many people how long they've been in that area. And so it's a good camaraderie there, you know, and it's a great feeling.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Auburn Avenue. To begin our stroll down memory lane today, we're going to start not at the physical beginnings of Auburn Avenue, the street, but at the beginning of its identity. And that starts with the name.
You think about what naming means in terms of expression of either opportunity or vision or expectation or ownership.
the name, so the name was changed from Wheat Street to Auburn by the white citizens because they thought it sounded more sophisticated. But really, John Wesley Dobbs.
It was John Wesley Dobbs. He said he called it Sweet. He said it was sweet. And it was sweet because it was a, at that time, a very viable, very strong, mostly business community. In 1957, it was on the cover of Fortune magazine, you know, as the richest street in America. You know, it was the what we now recognize as the, frankly, the good side of segregation in 1957.
So what happened between then and now, and then what's your job?
That's an interesting question because it, you know, it has taken me a while to figure out what happened between then and well, the now, even if it now predates this exact moment, but, you know, between then and it, let's say its decline. And it was desegregation to a great extent. Well, it was a combination of segregation, racism, and desegregation. So the segregation piece really was that to a great extent, segregation cut off and isolated it economically. So while it was booming and great, there was only so much economy within the African-American community that it could absorb or that it could have because it wasn't allowed to participate in the broader, bigger economy of the city or the state. So it was strangled or handicapped. It could only get to be so much. The racism part really has to do with the fact that the expressway came along, and expressways all across the country are, you know, generally end up being constructed in communities that have been destroyed to make way for them. And those communities, 99% of the time, were African American. And then the desegregation part was, and it took me, I read a book some years ago that finally helped me to understand why it didn't work. I understood that desegregation allowed African Americans to now take advantage of and participate in a larger, broader economic life in Atlanta and in the United States. And that by doing that, it's like, well, you said, you know, if I couldn't shop or, you know, buy that which I had the means to or even live where I wanted to, and now that I can, why wouldn't I? You know, and so people did that. And oftentimes it was the folks who had the most means, who had the capacity to do that.
And did that mean in the case of Auburn Avenue, people left the area to go?
So what happened was folks left the area around really the old Fourth Ward, then Fourth Ward. They left it to live in places like Collier House in Southwest Atlanta and places where heretofore African Americans couldn't live, but the houses were nicer and people who could afford it wanted a nicer house. And as a result of that, the built-in market for all those businesses and institutions, because churches are included, left the area. So, you know, businesses need a market, and that market was gone.
The long decline of Auburn Avenue does not diminish its geographic importance to the city of Atlanta. Realizing this potential is the provenance of the urban planner. And so, with us today is Ryan Gravel, senior urban designer at Perkins & Will, and the original visionary behind the Atlanta Beltline.
What I'm interested in from an urban planning perspective is creating places where people want to live. One way is through these sort of catalyst projects like the Beltline or the streetcar that are not sort of the whole answer, but they are implementing a piece of the answer that starts to catalyze change, both from a economic development standpoint in those districts, but also getting people to think differently about what their cultural expectations are for the places that we live.
Given its unique position as an artery between downtown and the historic neighborhoods of the Fourth Ward and Inman Park, it is ironic that what seems to be holding Auburn Avenue back is its ability to connect with the rest of the city. In a word, transportation. And in two sometimes hyphenated words, streetcar.
The groundbreaking was out at Jackson Street, right next to Ebenezer Baptist Church on at Auburn Avenue. And, you know, you're looking at downtown, right? It was just right there. And that, you know, I've seen streetcar projects in Portland and, you know, everywhere else. And you see what the transformation that it brings to those cities. And it's pretty amazing to think that here we are finally, Atlanta, a little slow to the gate, but we're getting there and we're going to have that same kind of thing, and it's going to have a similar kind of impact to our town along Auburn Avenue and Edgewood Avenue. It's pretty amazing to stand out there. And
what has it done for the other cities?
I mean, just totally transformed the most famous one, I guess, is the streetcar, the Portland streetcar in Portland, Oregon. And, you know, this isn't the light rail line that comes through downtown. This is a, you know, smaller neighborhood scale streetcar that goes out of the downtown district into what has become known as the Pearl District. And it was an industrial area on the edge of downtown, and it just totally transformed it. I mean, obviously there's other things going on, you know, in terms of growth in the city, but I mean, it totally transformed it with, now there's residential areas and retail. It's a truly walking urban environment. It's really fantastic.
Is it the connectivity that really is driving those types of revitalizations?
You know, I'm not sure exactly what it is. There's something about the streetcar. I mean, they don't move exceptionally fast, but they give a sense of confidence to the area, and there's a permanence to them, and people like to ride them, and they like to live in environments that are created by them. And so, you know, it does serve obviously a transit purpose, and people ride it for that reason. From the Pearl District, you ride it into town, whether you're working downtown or you're connecting to the light rail to take you to the airport. But there's also a sort of major economic development component to it, because it supports that walking kind of urban district, which most of these areas originally were before they got sort of obliterated by the automobile. You know, Auburn Avenue is a perfect example of a very rich, unique, and wonderful walking environment, and that was served by streetcars originally. And now, you know, after decades of sort of abandonment and all kinds of other challenges, sort of reviving with that, and using this as the tool for that.
In a way, like, ironic in that the interstate bisected Auburn Avenue, kind of leading to its decline, and hopefully this transportation component can help lead it back.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a more quaint way, right?
Right, yeah, right. In fact, I think it's council member Kwanzaa Hall who calls it the new downtown connector.
I like that. Yeah. How long has this been in the planning?
The streetcar, you know, I don't know when they're... I mean, of course, Atlanta had 300 miles of hard track trolleys all through the city, so we've had this before. The current version of it, and we lost them all in the 40s. I think the last one was in 49. The current plan, I think, has been going on for 8 or 10 years or so, I believe. It begs the question, though, if we can do that so quickly, let's do some more, you know? And I know the plans are to extend the streetcar both east and west to the Beltline and other lines throughout the city. And you could imagine, if properly funded, in the next few years, you know, next 10 years or so, a really robust streetcar network in the city, out to the Beltline and a little bit beyond, but then layered, of course, over the existing MARTA system and other transit improvements in the region. And then you really start to have that rich, layered transportation infrastructure that's required to build the kinds of cities that you want to live in. You look at any city that you want to live in, you know, the most livable cities in the world, they have really robust layered infrastructure systems.
What would your definition of success mean to Auburn Avenue in the impact from the streetcar specifically?
I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I don't know, but I, you know, streetcars across the country have had dramatically positive benefits in the districts that they run through, and there should be nothing different about that for Auburn Avenue. Auburn Avenue has a storied past, an important past in this town, but it's different. You know, times are different, and Auburn needs to be a part of the future. You know, in my opinion, not a museum, you know, not a theme park, you know, but play a significant and important role going forward in whatever happens in Atlanta, and it has opportunity to do that. I think that one thing is that really would be a big part of success is if the businesses and the landowners and the folks who are on Auburn Avenue now are able to leverage the investment of the streetcar and the activity that it's going to bring to create a really vibrant quarter again, that they're part of it and that they're not pushed out. But equally important is that it changes the way that we think about the city, and it changes what our cultural expectations are for the city. So yeah, it's great if you live in that district or that part of town, but if I live somewhere else, it gets you thinking about, well, what could we do in our community that will create similar kinds of conditions or equally transformational kinds of things. We've got a lot of things that need to be addressed, and so it's going to require that kind of, you know, not just the ability to sort of plan comprehensively, but the ability to sort of invest in things and do things that become catalysts for change, so that as we change people's minds, that opens the door and empowers our politicians to make broader and more comprehensive changes.
You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. Today's show, Auburn Avenue, brought to you by Perkins & Will. Just as difficult as connecting Auburn with itself and then the rest of the city is to connect Auburn Avenue with its past. The person in charge of maintaining this relationship is archivist Carrie Williams.
My primary purpose is to identify, collect, preserve, and then make available primary sources by and about people of color.
And the library itself has a rich history.
Oh, it has an absolutely amazing history. The Auburn Avenue Research Library, actually, the physical building is about, 17 years old. Mm-hmm. But the history of the library goes back to the early 20s with the erection of the Atlanta Public Library for coloreds. And so, the public library system was segregated in the early days. And so there was a library, a Carnegie building, that was built to serve the black population of Atlanta in the early 20th century.
This was the first library where African Americans could call their own, really, right?
Yeah, they could call it their own. So it was a neighborhood library, but it was also, community-oriented, focused. Some of the librarians who were employed there took a real interest in social development in the community, and Annie McPheeters was one of the first professional librarians of color, and she was located there, and she actually was the one who curated a special collection of African-American related material.
And when was this?
This was in the early 30s, and so this collection of non-circulating books, by African-American authors became the core of what is now the Samuel Williams Collection of the Reference and Research Division at Auburn. So we collect personal papers, including photographs, correspondence, programs, print material of individuals, and we also collect institutional records, association records, that document the social, economic, political history of people of African descent. And so for several years now, we have been targeting individuals that have been directly related to the development of African-American culture in Atlanta. Evelyn Frazier Papers, she was a black businesswoman. We can talk a little bit about her.
What business did she have?
She had a cafe, Frazier's Cafe Society, and that was on West Hunter Street, which is now Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, right up the street from Pascal's. And she actually predated Pascal's. And so she wanted to sort of emulate New York society, fine dining and white tablecloths. And her records really document the mid to late 30s through the mid 1980s. A lot of what I do is to really think, engage, how best to provide information for historians and documentarians and artists to create a more diverse narrative about, not just African-American history, but in this case, Atlanta history. And so how does Ms. Frazier's papers, how do her business records connect to, say, what Hosea Williams did, and we have his papers, what happened with, Andrew Young and the development of Atlanta, and we have his papers. And other businesses like the Atlanta Life Insurance Company. And it's, we do, we have the records of Atlanta Life Insurance Company, which was founded by Alonzo Herndon. And so because the company was formed in 1903, it's right there, at the cusp of what you know, became a catalyst for social and political activity, you know, in Atlanta and throughout the South. And Atlanta life, back in the early 20th century, it was very much a source of, it provided resources for civil rights organizations to fight for the equality of all citizens.
And what the library possesses, this catalog of history, is really the intrinsic value of Auburn Avenue, something that the physical development cannot create, but something that, through neglect, we're losing and forgetting. The challenge for Auburn Avenue is to simultaneously build up the street while building upon the cultural legacy of the place. We started off today learning about the origins of the name Sweet Auburn. And to conclude, we're going to bring in someone to offer a taste of Auburn sweetness, Chef Sonia Jones, the creator of the sweet potato cheesecake.
Well, Sweet Auburn Bread Company, it was pretty much conceived from a personal need. You know, I grew up in Atlanta. My mother was from Florida, and she grew up on a farm. She pretty much emulated her life here in Atlanta. So I grew up, we had a farm in our backyard. We actually had a mule, you know, plowing and stuff. So it's just, you know, I'm so comfortable with what I do because it's what I've always known. You know, like you're saying with you, I'm used to just authentic, from scratch, homegrown things. And that's what I've always longed for. So I do this, and then when the customer come in and I hear so many other people whining about, oh my gosh, you know, I haven't had this or that, you know, the from scratch and homemade desserts that I do. And when you come to my bake on the door, we have a slogan that says, we're baking memories. And so it was from a feedback from the customers. They would come in and they would just whine, oh my God, I haven't had an egg custer. They have memories. I had a great aunt that used to make it for me. My grandmother used to make it for me. And most of these people are no longer around, you know? So, and it goes back to the thought that, you know, we all crave in that, those good old comfort days in our lives, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm surprised at how many people have never had certain items. You know, I just feel some, you know, I feel so privileged. The more I hear people talk, you know, that just have never had sweet potatoes, that have never had a chocolate pound cake, that have just never had this and that had that, you know. So it's just enriching.
So tell us about the most popular.
Well, our most popular would be the sweet potato cheesecake. First of all, it's a small business. I had to create something to draw people just to me that no one else had. And I also wanted to create a upscale dessert. Based on just some down-home traditional Southern staples. And then I thought about, you know, cheesecakes are, you know, such a gourmet upscale dessert. You hear about the New York cheesecake, blah, 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 you know. So I decided to use a Southern staple, sweet potatoes, and use it in the cheesecake batter. But not only that, to take it a step further, instead of using graham cracker crumbs, I decided to use another Southern staple, which are pound cakes, because it's really good and rich as well. So, I had envisioned this really rich cheesecake, and then you have this really rich aftertaste from the pound cake. And I've just always said, once I put it together, it exceeded my expectations.
I'd like to thank my guests today, Ryan Gravel, M. Tamanika Youngblood, Carrie Williams, and Sonia Jones. Of course, we'd also like to thank our sponsor, Perkins & Will. You've been listening to Sidewalk Radio. I'm your host, Gene Kansas. We'll see you next month.